From the Premier League, it's the official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Conte's in at Spurs, so will the sun shine for him and Kane again? All that and more on this week's official Fantasy Premier League podcast. Hello again, listener. It's Fantasy Premier League time. I'm Kelly Summers, and once again this week I'm joined by three expert FPL managers to look back on Game Week 10 and ahead to Game Week 11. Alongside me, journalist and high-flying FPL player Adrian Clark. Hi, Adrian.
Hello, Kelly.
He's got a big smile on his face. He liked that intro. It's also football journalist Tom Williams is alongside him as well. Hello, Tom. Not quite so high-flying.
Hi, Kelly. Yeah, I wondered how you were going to... establish that distinction between Adrian's performance and my own. Probably the least said about the latter, the better.
And we're also joined by, I imagine, a very happy Spurs-supporting Sam Bonfield from FPL Family.
Hiya, Kelly. Yeah, it's been quite a good week for me all round.
Before we go any further, let's recap some of Game Week 10's high scorers then. Reece James tops the list with a huge 21 points after two goals at, as he put it, the aptly named St James's Park. He's now Chelsea's highest scorer of the season and the highest scoring defender in the game. Aaron Ramsdale got his first double digits. There were perhaps surprise goals and double digits for Burnley's Matt Loughton and Arsenal's Gabriel. Another double digits for Burnley's Maxwell Cornet, and Cristiano Ronaldo returned for the first time since Game Week 5. And of course, Mo Salah did get points, but just an assist this weekend. So Adrian, let's start with you because you had the best week, bar none, out of all of us. You had Ron Salah plus a few other high scorers as well, including Emile Smith-Rowe.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I was chuffed to bits with it. Emile Smith-Rowe, for me, is a must pick at the moment. He's playing so well. Really drives at defenders every time he gets the ball. He's got more of a goal threat, I think, than he had last season. And Arsenal in general are in good nick, aren't they? Aaron Ramsdale, I think, was the standout for me at the weekend, picking up some bonus points there. Wow. Just outstanding. I'm so excited about his potential, really, because I wasn't that excited when he first joined Arsenal. I was thinking, well, why are they doing this? They've already got Leno. Is he better than Leno? I'm not sure he is, but right now, Aaron Ramsdale is riding the crest of a wave, and yeah, long may it continue as far as my FPL team is concerned, because he's delivering points.
Yeah, it's taken you a few seasons, but finally having faith in Arsenal in FPL terms, at least, is paying off.
Oh, dear.
Adrian's been playing the long game all this time.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I'm enjoying these semi-regular clean sheets while they last. It won't go on forever. We know that.
I'm kind of saying this feeling quite bad because I actually benched both my Arsenal players last week, and look how that turned out. Emile Smith-Rowe and Ben White, 15 points on my bench. Anyway, Tom, 39 points for you, exactly the same as me. You actually did exactly the same on your bench, but you did keep the faith with Rafinha despite his injury concerns, and he did reward your patience, didn't he?
Rafinha was the one bright spot in an otherwise very gloomy week. I mean, Emile Smith-Rowe has picked up 22 points over the last two game weeks. And I've had him in my squad for both those game weeks, but he's been on the bench. So I'm bringing him in this weekend, and he is almost guaranteed now to blank against Watford as a consequence. But yeah, I mean, it was one of those weeks where most people struggled to score points. So although 39 points wasn't really what I was hoping for, it didn't feel too bad. But I feel like leaving points on the bench is a real feature this season, because it's quite easy to amass a very strong, very deep squad. And so those decisions about who to leave on the bench and the order of your substitutes feel more crucial than in any recent FPL season I can remember.
Yeah, I agree. It's because we've been blessed with the likes of Livramento and some of the cheaper defenders and even the cheaper midfielders like Emile Smith-Rowe getting those points regularly. So it's very tough decisions. Now, Sam, for you, marginally better points-wise with 42, largely thanks to clean sheets for Rudiger and Livramento, who I just mentioned then, and a goal, of course, for Raul Jimenez. But I did want to mention that since you were last on the podcast, you've been in really impressive form. You've climbed up to, I think it's 164,000 in the world. What's been key to that rise?
Oh, thank you for bringing that up, Kelly. I was in my head thinking, why was I not on this pod last week when I had 128 points?
We mentioned you, don't worry.
I did listen. Yeah, I think last week was just one of those where I'd been trying to differentiate my team very slowly over the last couple of weeks and bring in players that had lower level ownership. And that really helps because at this point, you know, for the last few weeks, Salah's been perma-captain for pretty much everyone in the game. So you're not getting any differential captaincy points. Everybody's got Livramento, although a lot of people keep benching him, so that's helpful for me. But then the likes of Trent, Antonio, they're so popular in the game, they're not really going to give you any rank rise, even if they return. So you can get a big return from them and then find yourself just stationary at your overall rank place. So for me, I've been trying to bring in some differentials over the last few weeks, and it does seem to have finally started making a difference. You know, having the likes of Foden, having the likes of Jimenez when they haven't been very highly owned has been really good for moving me up that overall rank.
Yeah, every time I see Raul Jimenez score, I think of you, Sam, because you did move him quite early, didn't you?
Yeah, he's one that I really do really enjoy owning. A few seasons ago, prior to his injury, he was so good at just regularly ticking over. You never really get like a massive, massive haul from Jimenez, but you can always guarantee that if there's a goal at Wolves and he's on the pitch, he's part of it in some way or another. And that consistency with him is something that I really love owning.
Well, there's not just been good news for Sam with her FPL team this week. As I said at the top, she is a huge Spurs fan. And of course, the big breaking news in the Premier League this week has been the change of manager in North London. And that's what we're chatting about next. So it was Nuno on Monday morning, less than 48 hours after Spurs' disappointing defeat to Manchester United. The club announced they had parted company with their Portuguese boss after just 17 games in charge. And they acted quickly with former Juve, Italy and Chelsea boss Antonio Conte appointed as their new head coach. A Serie A title winner in four of his last five seasons, plus a Premier League trophy and an FA Cup at Chelsea. Firstly, Sam, this must be music to your ears, mustn't it?
Yeah, I must admit that I thought Spurs would give Nuno longer, but that decision to take Lucas Moura off in that Manchester United game when he was by far and away, in my opinion, the best player on the pitch that day just seemed to be the final straw, really. And I guess at a time where other clubs were looking for managers, if there's one in particular that you want, you have to make early moves to ensure that they come to you rather than somebody else. And it was quite apparent in the summer that Spurs really wanted Conte. And obviously with the situation at Manchester United and, of course, Newcastle actively looking for a manager, I think the quick decision was what was needed from Spurs. And it was nice for a change to have a quick decision from Spurs on managerial appointments. We didn't have to wait a long time like last time.
Yeah, lots of very happy Spurs fans around the world listening, I'm sure. Now, Tom, what does this mean from an FPL point of view, do you think? Because we've been eyeing up Spurs' fixtures for some time. They only faced one of last season's top four between game weeks 12 to 22, starting with Leeds at home, Burnley away, Brentford home and Norwich at home.
Yeah, one word for you, wing-backs. That's what we can probably expect from Spurs under Antonio Conte. If you think back to his first season at Chelsea, he very quickly landed on this sort of 3-4-3, 3-4-2-1 system and just blew everyone out of the water. Used a similar system at Inter, albeit more of a 3-5-2. And I would have thought that's what he'll look to do at Spurs, and he certainly has the players for it. So from an FPL perspective, Sergio Reguilón is already a very attacking fullback. If you put him further forward as a wingback, he's going to be an even more attractive asset. Probably looking at Emerson Royale on the other side. Son and Kane are obvious starters. And then I guess it comes down to, does he pick another more attacking player, like Lucas Moura, for example, or maybe even Dele Alli, or does he go with it with a midfield three? But yeah, I think for me, you know, we all know the obvious big ticket Spurs assets, but I think those wingbacks will be worth keeping an eye on in the weeks ahead, particularly as you say with that fantastic winner games they've got.
It just screams Son. Son is going to be a player that Antonio Conte loves, and he's, as we know, he's enjoying a good season in a poor campaign for Spurs. The most chances created for Tottenham, 17. The most shots, 24. That's five more than Harry Kane. So for me, yes, Son Heung-min becomes someone that I have to bring into my team, really, moving forwards. The issue, of course, is overnight, will the new manager bounce suddenly make Spurs create a hatful of chances? That's the great unknown. only Norwich have had fewer shots from open play than Spurs. So there's a lot of work to do for Conte. But all of a sudden, I am interested in Tottenham assets.
Yeah, we also asked this question to our Twitter followers at OfficialFPL asked, with Antonio Conte arriving at Spurs in time for a promising fixture run, who will you be eyeing up? Spuds in Water, brilliant Twitter handle, also agreed with Reggie on wingbacks are everything for him. Remember Victor Moses and that golden FPL season? Lawrence Egan also said, I'm waiting for who plays wingbacks for Senor Conte. FPL Burner says, I picked up Kane after Lukaku got injured. Was seriously thinking about dropping him after a disappointing few weeks. Now I'm definitely keeping him. Now, Sam, you've been waiting all season to bring Harry Kane in. You have already bought him in. Is this going to kickstart his season?
With Harry Kane, he obviously had a very difficult summer. He was very unsettled. And I don't think the managerial appointment at the time really inspired him to think that Spurs were going to challenge for glory and trophies, which is what he wants. The arrival of Conte, who is one of the best managers in the world right now, can only inspire him. When you look at what Conte did for Romelu Lukaku in his Inter Milan days, surely that inspires Harry Kane to be better. For me, I, like the listener was saying, I was in the camp where I was thinking, did I go really badly wrong with this Kane decision? Did I look at those fixtures and fall into a Harry Kane trap? Because we all know that I do love having him in my FPL team. But now the arrival of Conte makes me think, actually, maybe this is the turning point for him. And I can see him having a really good game against Everton this weekend.
Yeah, and we know as well that Antonio Conte is a big fan of Harry Kane as well. When he was on Punditry, I think it was over the summer, where he described him as a complete striker and he said he's clinical, but as a coach, I would always keep him in the box because he's devastating. So hopefully that means more shots from a Harry Kane owner's perspective. And interestingly, against Everton, he's got 6 goals and 40 FPL points from his last 3 visits to Goodison Park. So we could be set for immediate points as well. Tom, where do you sit on the debate between Son versus Kane? Because I'm seeing a lot of managers debating that. Obviously, Son's that bit cheaper than Harry Kane. Who's the better FPL asset, do you think? I know Adrian has said about Son.
Yeah, for me, I think Son as well. I'm looking to bring him in probably the next game week. I mean, he has multiple advantages. One is that he's cheaper. I think he's 10.2 FPL million at the moment. As a midfielder, his goals are more valuable than Kane's will be. And he's in better form. You know, Kane has been sort of drifting through games like a ghost pretty much since the start of the season. Feels like he's still coming to terms with that. That move to Manchester City that didn't come off, whereas Son has looked like his old self. So I kind of feel like Conte will need to do more work with Harry Kane, because I think there's, you know, Harry Kane hasn't looked like a particularly happy camper the last few weeks. And I think Conte will have to coach him quite carefully, whereas Son is already where you would hope him to be. So yeah, I think the jury's still out for me on Harry Kane. So I'll be bringing in Son Heung-min pretty sharpish.
I should also add that he's got very good form against Everton as well. He got 21 points against them back in 2018-19. And this season already, he's got 4 goals and 2 assists. He's 10.2 million. Sam, are there any other players you think we've missed or we should have on our radar? I should also say at this point, we're recording this podcast on Thursday morning. We will get our first glimpse of Antonio Conte's Spurs in the Europa Conference League tonight.
The 4 that we've talked about so far in Reguilón, Royale, Son and Kane, they are your kind of go-tos. But there is some potential elsewhere. So if you don't have the budget for the likes of Reguilón and Royale, then you are going to be able to go in for those cheaper options, because likely we're going to see Eric Dier, likely we're going to see Tanganga starting if he goes with this kind of 5 defence with 3 centre-backs. They could both offer some great value for money. They're not going to get the attacking returns, but if you've got 4.5 million, they're in the right ballpark. But I also think it will be interesting to see how he sets up the middle, because it's those 3 middle positions for me that are the most easy to change at Spurs right now. Obviously, Højbjerg is going to take one of them, but who has the other 2 could make for really interesting decisions for FPL managers. At the moment, we've seen it be Skip and Mora, but it can be Ndombele and Lo Celso. So depending on where we go, we could have a really good option in Lucas Moura, because he will play in that attacking position. And he's been by far and away our best attacking player so far this season, in my opinion, in terms of work ethic and commitment. He is one of those players that if he starts in the conference, I suspect then he will start against Everton and it could be a nice differential.
I think Dele Alli is probably worth keeping an eye on as well. If Conte goes for the sort of 3-4-2-1 that he used at Chelsea, that more attacking player could be Lucas Moura, perhaps, and you'd expect him to play up basically alongside Son and Kane. But he could pick a central midfielder who's going to break into the box from midfield, and that could be Lo Celso, it could be Tanguy Ndombele, it could also be Dele Alli. Dele Alli is, you know, sort of the forgotten man of Tottenham Hotspur in recent times, and consequently has become a bit of a forgotten man in fantasy football terms. But I bet Conte will enjoy working with him. He's got that bit of devilment about him that I think Conte will appreciate. And he's also a goal scorer. You know, prior to the sort of slump that he entered into a couple of seasons ago, his numbers as an attacking midfielder were better than, you know, Steven Gerrard's, Frank Lampard's, Paul Scholes is at a similar age. And we thought we were witnessing the birth of the next great goal scoring box to box midfielder. That's been put on hold. But if Conte can sort of unlock Dele Alli in FPL terms, he could be absolute gold.
Yeah, just £6.4 million for Dele Alli. What an FPL asset he could be if he can find some form. Now, Spurs do face Everton in Antonio Conte's first game in charge. That's on Sunday at 2 p.m. UK time. Let's now take an in-depth look at some of the other fixtures awaiting us next. Now, Game Week 11 kicks off on Friday, meaning 6:30 p.m. UK time is your deadline this weekend. That game's at St Mary's, Southampton versus Aston Villa. Saturday sets off with a big one, the Manchester Derby. Then 3:30 p.m. fixtures, Brentford, Norwich, Chelsea, Burnley and Palace, Wolves. Brighton versus Newcastle is then the late game. Then Sunday sees the rarity of 3:02 p.m. fixtures, including Conte's first game in the dugout at Goodison, Arsenal versus Watford and Leeds versus Leicester, before it all ends in a top four clash, West Ham versus Liverpool. As always, in this section, we ask our panel to pick out one fixture and give us the FPL lowdown. So Adrian, kick us off with the small matter of the Manchester Derby.
Oh, it's a big one, isn't it? I was actually at the Etihad Stadium last night for the game against Club Brugge, and yeah, there were two or three standout performers whereby you'd think Pep will go with them at the weekend, and Raheem Sterling was excellent off the bench. Now, I don't know how many people have still retained faith in Raheem Sterling, but he looked dynamite. So he could be someone that comes into the reckoning for this fixture. Phil Foden is the one that really interests me. I think there's a temptation on my part and probably many others to bring him in, because I feel that he is the number one choice as false nine. Made some great runs in the game last night, and there's some excellent stats as well. He's been directly involved in 14 goals in his last 16 away Premier League matches for Manchester City, which is just remarkable. 11 goals and 3 assists in his last 16 away games. That's just mental. So you would imagine, given how poor Manchester United are without the ball at the moment, that his runs, his confidence, his quality could be really damaging for United in this game. My overall feeling is to avoid United defenders. I think most people would see that as an obvious in this game, regardless, because of the way they've been performing. So we'll have to wait and see. As for me personally, Cristiano Ronaldo will definitely stay in my team. My faith was beginning to waver, but not too much. But he's had a very good week, hasn't he? And I still feel that he's fixture proof, even if he's playing against Manchester City. He's such a big game player that I'd always back him to make a contribution. So I wouldn't advise anyone to move him on. But for me, this is about City assets, the players going forward, Sterling, Foden and Bernardo Silva as well. I think is a bargain player. Around 7 million on FPL. And he was excellent in the Champions League last night.
Yeah, Manchester United saved in midweek once again by Cristiano Ronaldo. I think a few managers who were thinking of selling are similar to Adrian, now double thinking that and thinking, if there is one Manchester United player to have, it does look like it's going to be Ronaldo. We've also had the news that Rafael Varane is going to be out. Tom, that must only enhance the appeal of City's attackers for this one.
Yeah, completely. And as ever with City, the challenge is picking, you know, which attacking player, you're going to go with. I have been faithful to Jack Grealish ever since the start of the season. I had him in my game week one team and he's been there ever since. And I mean, watching City, you're encouraged because Grealish starts most league games in an attacking position, high up on the left-hand side, and gets on the ball a lot, but just hasn't really been doing a great amount with it. His returns have been pretty disappointing, both from an FPL perspective and from a real-life perspective, if you like. So I am planning to bench him this weekend and then replace him with Son, which means he's almost guaranteed to score or you know, pick up an assist or something this weekend. But yeah, I think, you know, looking at Man United defensively, I completely agree with Adrian. I mean, you know, they have been very poor defensively this season. I think a lot of us had Luke Shaw last season at the beginning of this season, but, you know, his form is not what it was. And, you know, we saw the impact that Rafael Varane had coming back into the team. I suspect he'll be a big miss now that he's back on the sidelines again.
We talked there about Manchester United defence and avoiding. It's been quite frustrating, hasn't it, with Manchester City's defence, Sam? Only one clean sheet in their last four, but Cancelo does keep tempting us. He got three assists in the Champions League on Wednesday. Which is the standout defender there? Is it Cancelo, do you think, still?
Do you know, over the last few weeks, my priority transfer in has been a Man City defender, and it's been constant. But then there's always been something else that's cropped up. Somebody's got injured, somebody's on really terrible form, and I just haven't ever got there. I still maintain that Cancelo is the best pick in that Manchester City defence. I think last season, obviously, he was the most attacking player there, but you went with Diaz if you wanted the security of starts because Cancelo was still a bit of a rotation risk. But obviously, going into this season, we've seen Cancelo hold that spot. This week will be interesting because Manchester City will be without Laporte, who got sent off in the game last weekend. So there are going to be disruption to both defences this time around in terms of who's usually on the pitch for them. But I think with Cancelo, what you do have is somebody who, as we saw in the Champions League this week with his assist potential, if the clean sheet goes, there's still potential upside there. And that's why he's worth the money for me, where maybe some of the others aren't quite.
And that also probably helps us when we're talking about having strong benches before, if our City defender doesn't play, at least we've got the likes of maybe Livramento or someone to come in. Tom, moving on to Saturday's 3pm fixtures then, you've picked out one of those.
Yeah, I'm looking at Brentford-Norwich and I think people might be starting to go a little bit cold on Brentford in an FPL sense because their form has fallen away, three straight defeats. But I think one cast iron rule of FPL this season is that if you have players in your squad who are due to play Norwich, pick them, pick all of them and do so without any hesitation whatsoever.
Poor Norwich.
I've got Ivan Toney. His FPL form, his Premier League form has been disappointing in terms of his returns. He's gone four games without returning in FPL. But you watch Ivan Toney, he's such an impressive footballer. He has played every single minute of the season for Brentford. He's involved in all their attacking football and he gets at least one or two big chances every game, and they haven't been going in the last few weeks. I suspect they might go in against Norwich. There's Brian Mbeumo as well, the king of the woodwork. fifth highest expected goals for midfielders this season, but because he keeps hitting the post and the crossbar, that's not being reflected in his goal return. And yeah, defensively, as I said, you know, the last 3 weeks, Brentford haven't shown quite the same defensive solidity that they did over the first 9 weeks of the season. But again, they're at home to Norwich. And then beyond that, their fixtures are pretty decent. I think they're second in the fixture difficulty rating, Brentford at the moment. So yeah, even if you're going a bit cold on Brentford, hold fire for this weekend at least. And given that nice run of games they've got coming up, if they can put in a decent performance, get a good result against Norwich, that could be the platform for them to go on and rediscover some of that early season form.
Let's move on, Sam. And you are looking at the final game of the weekend, West Ham versus Liverpool. This is always a high scoring fixture, but given the form of both of these teams, this is really intriguing, isn't it?
Do you know, I am so looking forward to this game. It's got potential to be one of the best games of the season with the form that these two teams are in. Mo Salah was captained by 4.6 million FPL managers last week, which was a record by a long, long way. In fact, now he has the top three entries for captaincy records over the course of the season. He is just in such a brilliant run of form. And I was watching him very closely during the Champions League this week, thinking, is he going to continue this goal scoring record? And we didn't quite see that in the Champions League, but maybe he's saving it for us for Sunday's FPL returns. He does really enjoy facing West Ham. He's got 9 goals in 8 meetings against them and averages 10 points per 90. So he is going to be probably the most popular captaincy pick again, although we'll talk about it later because I think there are some other good options there too. Sadio Mane shouldn't be overlooked. He was having a really good game against Atletico Madrid in the Champions League this week, obviously got taken off because it was a bit of a fiery one and he was on a yellow card. But I think that bodes well for him in the Premier League this weekend. 5 goals and 4 assists from him against West Ham in 10 appearances. But for me, the really interesting thing that happened this week was the Firmino injury during the Champions League. He came off with a hamstring after just 30 minutes on the pitch. For me as a Jota owner, suddenly I don't have a fire that I thought I had to put out in the middle of the midfield. When Jota was starting, I thought, well, that does not bode well for him playing on Sunday against West Ham. But Firmino going off injured and Klopp's comments at the end of the game make me now think that actually having Jota could be a really good thing this weekend.
What about from a West Ham point of view then? Because Mikel Antonio is an intriguing one, isn't he? Only 2 goal involvements in the past 7 game weeks, but everyone does seem to still be holding on to him. Adrian, how are you feeling about the Hammers front man?
I rate him. I think he is so heavily involved in everything that West Ham do that it's inevitable that those figures will climb. I think he's second only to Mo Salah for the most shots in the Premier League so far this season. So it's not as if he's not getting into those positions to score. I don't own him, but if I did own him, I wouldn't be looking to offload. I think he's someone that is guaranteed to start. We know that. Mm. And he's guaranteed to be heavily involved. And he's somebody that can create chances as well. I'm on the Benrahma bus and he just keeps ticking over with points. He's not in sensational form, but he keeps on chipping in with the odd assist, the odd goal here and there. So for me, he's still providing good value. In this particular match, as far as my team's concerned, I've got this quandary at the moment with Joel Matip, who was an absolute bargain signing for me earlier on in the season at the heart of the Liverpool defence. In my opinion, the best partner for Virgil van Dijk, but suddenly Konate's playing and now I'm thinking, I need to make that change. So I can no longer trust that Joel Matip will play every week. I'm not going to make that substitution this week, though, because they did concede a couple at Brighton. Maybe Konate will be the full guy and Matip will come back in. So I'm going to hold fire, keep my powder dry, but I'm watching that one closely.
My issue with Mikel Antonio, though, is his record against the bigger sides. So he has 4 goals in 8 Premier League appearances against Liverpool, which is fine, but his last return against them was in the 18-19 season, so a significant time ago. When we look at him against the big six, he only has 1 double-digit haul against big six clubs in 51 appearances. Wow. He does have 17 goals and 5 assists, but in 51 appearances, that actually isn't a lot of returns. Now, given the fixtures that they have coming up, they've obviously got Liverpool next, they've got Man City, and they've got Chelsea in the next 5. That's 3 games where I wouldn't be convinced that he will get FPL returns. And as an Antonio manager, looking at him with his 1 goal in the last 4 matches, and looking longingly at Ivan Toney and his fixture run that he's got coming up, thinking, you know, he's got Norwich, as Tom's already told us about. That on paper, they're much, much better fixtures. And their form is quite similar, actually, at the moment. You know, Antonio seems to have lost some of that magic that we had early on. So I am slightly concerned. I think the only player from a West Ham perspective that I think really is investable right now is Jarrod Bowen. He's in fantastic form with returns in 5 of the last 6 game weeks. He's 3rd for threat amongst midfielders in the game. He's also 5th for XG underachievers across the season so far, meaning actually he should have returned far more than he has in terms of the goals that he scored. So Bowen could be somebody that you do look to invest in because he's in this purple patch of form. Whereas Antonio, I am really on the fence of whether to keep him or sell him this week.
Well, some tricky fixtures then coming up for West Ham. Now it's time to assess some of the other team's fixtures in the long view. Long view time, using the fixture difficulty rating, we're identifying teams with kind runs of form coming up. Conveniently, as we discussed, Spurs are at the top now, but one team creeping up the ticker with Wolves, Burnley, Villa and Leeds in their next 4 are Crystal Palace. And Tom, they're even more topical given their huge win at the Etihad last weekend, aren't they?
Yeah, completely. And I think that, you know, that the player who sort of summed up that entire performance was Conor Gallagher. You know, fantastic goal scoring box to box player and one of several players in FPL terms who's in that sort of 5.5 to 6 million bracket. Very sort of attractively priced. He's not going to return every single week, but he is going to play. And he's a player who gets himself into dangerous positions. He's been on my watch list pretty much since the start of the season. Odson Edouard as well is another one, albeit, you know, not sort of as heavily involved in that victory against City. But yeah, I think given Palace's run, particularly the next four, home to Wolves, away at Burnley, home to Villa, away at an out-of-form Leeds team. Yeah, I can certainly see the value in bringing in at least one of those Palace players for that run.
Coming into my team, that's for sure. I saw him in the flesh at Arsenal recently, and what struck me about him was his determination to get into the box at every single opportunity. You know, that was Arsenal away, and he was breaking into the box for fun, and he did the same, obviously, against City to score. He saw the space and ran into it. He is the, you know, he's had the most shots, I think, for Palace. He's created the most chances. So, yeah, I think he's an absolute bargain. And, yeah, looking at the fixtures, I'm sucked in by it. Gallagher's coming in.
The thing is with Gallagher, he's actually been in really good form all season. I watched him when he played against Liverpool right at the beginning of the season, and he was impressive then. He just didn't have the finishing in his game at that point. But what we've seen over the last few weeks is he's suddenly added that element to his game as well. And we are getting returns now from him. So I think he is almost the perfect midfield option right now, because he comes in nice and cheap in terms of the budget. He's got the form. Crystal Palace are on a absolute rocket right now. Vieira has massively transformed them. So what is not to like about Gallagher right now?
Yeah, just 5.7 million, still selected by less than 10% of managers. And I know a few managers were burned by putting him on their bench last weekend when he got 13 points away at City. I don't think anyone really saw that coming. Looking at other Palace assets as well, 3 goals now for Wilfried Zaha, 6.9 million. Or what about Edouard at 6.5? He's got 2 goals so far this season. Would you be tempted by any of those, Tom?
Potentially. I mean, Edouard made that great start, didn't he, with the 2 goals at home to Spurs in his...
Thanks for reminding me of that, Tom.
Sorry, Sam. in his first appearance, 2 goals in 6 minutes. So his sort of, you know, minutes per goal ratio was off the charts at that point. He's only scored once since then. You look at his profile, you look at the sort of player who Palace needed in that role, I feel like he ticks a lot of the boxes. And at that price, you know, 6.5, you don't have to break the bank to bring him in. This run of games could well be the run of games where he comes back into form. But for me, I think I'd need to see a little bit more evidence that, you know, that he's going to score regularly. For me, yeah, the standout Palace pick is Gallagher. Cheaper than Zaha, cheaper than Edouard, and pretty much as big a goal threat as each of those. I think he's the one.
One more to add. What about Tyrick Mitchell at the back? Very cheap. I think £4.5 million. They are beginning, obviously got a clean sheet against Manchester City. No mean feat, even though they were down to 10 men. I think that their defence is settling in brilliantly under Patrick Vieira. It's a brand new back four, obviously 2 new centre backs in, you know, with Gerhi in there, who's been good alongside Anderson. I think that they are capable of putting clean sheets together on this run, Crystal Palace. I really do. And Mitchell looks a shoe in at left back, and obviously he will get forward on occasion. So he's one to consider.
Yeah, owned by less than 1% of managers, 4.5 million and 13 points over the last 2 weeks for Tyrick Mitchell. And Adrian, there's another team that have been catching your eye. We haven't spoken about them quite as much recently, but their form and their fixtures are still pretty good.
Yeah, it's Wolves. Yeah, if you look at the fixture difficulty rating sort of league, Wolves are way down on it. But that's skewed because they've got Liverpool and Manchester City in games 5 and 6 of the next run. They've got Palace away, West Ham at home, Norwich away, Burnley at home. And for me, Wolves are one of the most informed teams in the division under Bruno Lage. Very attack-minded. And they are creating chances. We saw that against Everton. So the likes of Raúl Jiménez certainly come into my thoughts ahead of this run. So yeah, I think long view wise, even though they're not at the top of it, Wolves, keep your eye on them.
Yeah, I'm sure Sam will agree on that. A big Raúl Jiménez fan, as we discussed. Well, it's time for us to move on to the final section of the podcast. It's transfers and captains. Time to find out then what the panel are doing with their teams. Let's start with transfers. Sam, what are you going to be doing with your team? Because you've said you maybe don't have quite as many fires as you thought.
No, so this week I was kind of looking at Jota thinking probably now might be the time where I need to exit stage right. But reluctantly, because whenever he does play, I really like watching him. He's really good. He always feel like he can get involved in the action. So I've actually got no flags and I've got 2 free transfers and I'm invested in Spurs already. So I want to try and just keep one of those transfers for over the international breaks so that will have two, which means I'll probably make some sort of transfer around Damari Gray, who I've been less than impressed with Everton. Now I've said that, he'll definitely score against Spurs. But Damari Gray to Mbeumo, Damari Gray to Smith Rowe, one of those two options I think will be my transfer this week.
What about you, Tom? What are you planning on doing?
I'm planning to make a transfer that I should have made last week. I'm going to upgrade Cesar Azpilicueta to either Ben Chilwell or Reece James. Thought about making this move last week.
Oh, no.
For obvious reasons. Ben Chilwell, Reece James, super attacking. And then I said, no, Tom, patience. Oh. Patience. You don't want to take Cesar Azpilicueta out of your team and then he pops up and scores a rare goal because you'll kick yourself and it'll ruin your weekend. So I sat there and what happened? He didn't even play. The order of my subs was useless. So I didn't even get the Emile Smith Rowe or the Ben White points. And Reece James, you know, smashed in a couple of goals and Ben Chilwell got a clean sheet. So this week I'm doing Azpilicueta to Chilwell. And then, very foolishly, on the eve of an international break, I'm planning to make a speedy double transfer because I've got two free transfers currently. So I'm going to roll one over to game week 12 so I can bring in Son Heung-min and then a cheapo midfielder in place of Damari Gray and then just sit there with my fingers crossed that none of my players get injured during the international window. That is my foolproof plan for game weeks 11 and 12.
What could possibly go wrong, Tom?
What could possibly go wrong?
Adrian, Tom is going big. Are you going as big?
I'm going bigger. I'm going to take a 4-point hit this week. Look, one of the running themes earlier on in the show was about strengthening the bench. And my bench isn't strong enough. Not when the likes of a Matip could be rotated or even a Ruben Dias. That's happened to me on occasion. So I want to strengthen my bench, but I can't make one transfer without making another. And I can't make two without getting the third one in there, if that makes sense. So for me, Kane, Modair, who's done nothing and has just been a filler, and Ismail Assar are out. The fixtures for Watford are horrendous. And an income, three, I think, points getters in Raul Jimenez, Son, and Conor Gallagher. So I've got three guys that I think I can rely on in place of really just Kane. So I think it's going to be worth the hit. Raul Jimenez, 20 chances created. Only Antonio and Salah have created more chances out of forwards this season. He's been getting lots of chances as well inside the box. And I see him returning to real form. We've discussed Son and Gallagher as well. So that's my big move this week.
Okay, moving on to the captaincy debate then. Every week, Mo Salah seems to be the outstanding choice. And once again, this is a fixture that he likes. He scored twice in this exact fixture last season. Is he the standout again for you, Sam?
Yes, definitely he is. I mean, his record against West Ham is good. But I do think this week there is potential. I mean, we have seen him. I don't want to say he's not been informed because he definitely has been even the last couple of weeks, even with just the one assist and nothing in the Champions League. But just because Adrian is going to sell him this week, I do think that Kane is a viable captaincy option this time around. I do suspect that he will have some new manager bounce for Antonio Conte against Everton. He will want to perform in that game. Knowing Harry Kane like I do and watching what's been going on with him lately, his record against Everton is excellent. Everton have been so poor defensively. I can see a Harry Kane haul this time around. Everton have the worst big chances conceded total over the last four game weeks. They've conceded 15 big chances. Nobody else across the division has been worse than that. Give Harry Kane 15 big chances, you're struggling. He could be captain this week.
Sam, are you actually going to do that Harry Kane captaincy, or are you worried about not doing Mo Salah?
Honestly, I'm really on the fence on it. And so it's going to come down to risk and reward. A big part of me just wants to go, do it. Put it on Kane. He's the one you think is going to have the best game week this weekend. He's got a much easier fixture than Salah. But then I am honestly terrified of not captaining Salah, because if you don't captain Salah and he bangs, the red arrow is guaranteed and it'll be huge.
Did you not see Spurs against Manchester United?
Oh, I did. it can only get better, Adrian.
That is true.
I guess the thing for me, and the reason I probably won't be brave enough to put it on Kane and I'll probably stick with Salah, is that Kane is a huge differential himself right now, without captaining him, just owning him makes him a differential and it's going to give me a bit of a green arrow. Whereas not captaining Salah, guaranteed red arrow, whatever happens, it feels like at the moment.
What about you then, Tom? What are you thinking of doing captaincy? Are you going to be bold and go anywhere else?
No. Let's face it. Let's face it. We're all going to captain Salah. Everyone who's listening to this is going to captain Salah. Maybe there are, you know, other alternatives. You know, if you're sort of in danger of being cut adrift in your mini league and you're desperate to claw back ground, then you should think about doing something a bit more creative. But I think it has to be Salah.
Adrian, are you on the Mo Salah bandwagon?
Yeah, boring, Adrian. Yeah, I'm going for Mo Salah. You can't not. He's the best player in the world at the moment. And I just think it would be folly to go elsewhere. If I was going to go elsewhere, I might give it to Son on the fancy that this new manager bounce will hit at sort of beleaguered Everton. But yeah, no, it has to be Mo.
Can we get a clip of Adrian singing Boring, Boring Adrian? Just so we can drop it in where needed in future podcasts, should the need ever arise.
I think it will crop up on regular occasions somewhere about that.
If you're being boring, I'm sure millions of other managers are being boring as well. Mo Salah, once again, I'm sure is going to be the most captained player in game week 11. Guys, thank you so much for joining me. As always, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, Sam, Boring, Boring Adrian, and to Tom. That's all we've got time for this week. Don't forget your deadline is Friday this week, an earlier deadline of 6:30 p.m. UK time, of course. That's before Southampton versus Aston Villa. Another quick nudge as well to pit your wits against us and join our League 2 on 1KIKS7. That's your code. And as always, we'll be back wherever you get your podcasts next Thursday. Bye-bye.